Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is ACS, and it's a Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and chat with each other, inform each other, educate each other, abuse each other, all kinds of things. And I thank you once again for joining me tonight for another session of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay, as per usual, I'll give you both sets. Probably by the end of the month, I'll stop doing this. If you want to reach me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions that you would normally ask on the Technical Net, but if you can't reach the repeater at Sunday night, you can email me. Or you can offer to discuss some topic in the news if you're well-versed on it and would like to share it with others or part of a conversation on the topic. Or you could offer a technical puzzle. I'm always looking for them. They're very rare and very priceless. But we don't have a budget, so we can't pay. But you get my admiration. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space or NASA-related story. Now, you can email him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if you want to email me, you can either use mailbag@ac2gs.com or my new one, which is roy@limarktech.net. I keep a link page of articles and YouTube and all kinds of fun stuff that I collect over the previous week, and I put it on a link page available 24/7. So any old time, you can go to your browser, type in either roy.ac2gs.com or links.limarktech.net, and both of them will get you to the same place pretty much, and you can look at the link. We have a chat room. It's not really busy, but you never know what might happen someday. You can get to the chat room by typing into the browser chat.ac2gs.com, or the alternative is chat.limarktech.net. And I offer an audio stream of the Technical Net, and I leave it on the rest of the week. So if you have a network connection to the Internet, but you don't have a radio to listen to Glen Oaks, you can type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com or alternatively stream.limarktech.net, and that will give you the audio stream. I always like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. He has archived the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of it. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I got planned. Well, we will be asking for questions and topics and comments. I would prefer the first a few to be amateur radio related, since this is an amateur technical net, but I understand that there's surprisingly not that many amateur radio-based technical questions, so I'm open to any topic in science and technology. I'll try my best. That should take us to about 10:15, when Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report. That will take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you all a good week. So that's the idea if the laws of physics continue and all the equipment that I use and the repeater uses continue to work. We'll see how that works out. Also, tonight, I just want to complain about something, which I'll do after I drop the mic for a second. Well, if everyone hopefully remembers when I complained that the ARRL had decided not only to increase the membership dues, which I understand prices are going up, but to decide to discontinue shipping the print copy of QST unless you pay usury fees of $25 additional for the printed magazine. You can get the unprinted magazine in virtual form, you know, through the Internet, but not quite the same to me as a nice ink and paper version of it. So I complained about it a couple of months ago, and people commiserated, and other people thought that it was good and proper that they should ask all that money. But I discovered a new wrinkle. Let me drop for a sec. The new wrinkle, apparently, and if you read the little small print that was published with the cost increases, you would have discovered it earlier than I did. But I got an email this past week that said, by the way, even though you're paid up until next August, we're going to stop sending you the printed magazine December 31st. So if you want that January issue of QST, you're going to have to pay a prorated price of that $25 extra a year. So, you know, they didn't even let me get skirted until the next time it was time to pay dues. It was December 31st and cut off. So talk about pinching pennies and just leaving everyone with a bad taste in their mouth. I'm sure there are people out there who haven't joined the ARRL, and others that are wondering whether they should stay with the ARRL, and others that don't care. So if anyone has any comments, commiseration, or telling me I'm a cheapskate, please feel free.
KD2VHD.
Yes, Jim.
That carrier was not me. Somebody check and see if I got it. So this is Jim, KD2VHD, Bayport. I don't have the background in history in amateur radio to comment on the history of publication. But I will tell you that I very strongly feel that amateur radio, from its beginning, had its heart as an alternative means of communication. Every little piece where it turns away from that piece of the wall chipped away of what this thing is and could be. Some people, I believe, intended to be just a wall cop, keeping the frequencies clear of whatever malfeasance we could be talking about. But at its heart, this is an alternative communication system. And when it gets compromised in the way you describe one way that it's compromised, I'm disappointed. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I understand your feeling, Jim. Like I said, if I was hunky-dory with it, I wouldn't have brought it up on the technical net. I don't know. I think it's chintzy. I understand that the price of things have gone up, and unfortunately, I've remarked many times, urging people if they like a magazine out there and they get it from a friend after he paid for it and read it, consider subscribing yourself, because if not enough people subscribe, advertising rates have gone down, subscriptions have gone down. And a lot of magazines that I used to love are just memories anymore. So I cherish the magazines that still are published. I understand prices have gone up, but I don't know. This strikes me as a rather penny-ante type of a thing. I can't possibly believe it would make a dramatic difference in the economy of the ARRL. I just think it's too many people who used to be accountants before they retired thinking these things up. But, you know, what can I tell you? It is what it is.
What happens is, like I said, it's almost like the mail has become an alternative means of communication. If everything's on the web, there's only one switch. I concur with your side, is my point.
Yeah, Rich recognized, he kind of doubled with Jim, but we'll give you a chance in a second. I understand there's nothing inherent in an amateur radio club, organization, what have you, doesn't necessarily require a magazine. I'm glad that they do have the magazine. I'm such a magazine nut that I'm a member of the Royal Society of Great Britain, because I enjoy reading their magazine, Radcom. Thankfully, they haven't pulled this scam yet, but if it's successful with the ARRL, it probably will be. So, you know, it's not, I don't see it as a betrayal of the concepts of amateur radio. I don't know. I just see it as a kind of cheapskate, accounting move as opposed to anything else. Rich, you wanted to say something?
And WS2N, I double with Rich.
Oh, okay. Paul recognized first Rich, then Paul.
Yeah, forget about whether it's a cheapskate move. It's an illegal move. Paid your money for your subscription. You entered into a contract with them to deliver certain services, one of which is sending you the magazine every month. And if you're paid up till April and they're stopping it in December, they're violating their contract with you. Any lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer, but any lawyer would tell you that, Roy. Back to you.
Okay. I would have to review the letter of the agreement, if there was one. But, you know, usually we all know that when we do renewals, it is no really legal paperwork that I could remember. It's just kind of like you want another year's membership to the organization. Give us your credit card, and thank you very much. And yes, we'll take your discount code that makes you eligible to be sent one or two books. The last 3 years, I haven't gotten any of those discount books. So, you know, I have a whole bunch of reasons. If I wanted to waste my time suing the ARRL, I probably could. But I don't know. If it gets to the point where you're suing the ARRL, you're probably just best off to just leave the organization if you're that unhappy with them. I don't know. It's disappointing. My emotional thing for this is more disappointment than anything else. You know, just, you know, some guy who you just discovered was a rude bastard, you know, and it disappointed at their character. Paul, what do you want to say?
I thought the same thing when I read that email, so I kept the email. And there is one sentence in there which I really don't know what they mean by it, but it says here, you know, it says our print subscription is $25 a year. Then it says your magazine subscription will be synced up with your current membership term. Synced, S-Y-N-C-E-D. Could that mean that, you know, in my case it's like August, you know, could that mean that, you know, they're going to keep giving me QSC up until August? You know, it's, what's in the wording? What does that mean, you know? I was curious about that one sentence that they put in there. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS, what it means, I believe, simply that they're going to prorate it. So, in other words, if you go up there to get the magazine mailed to you, they're not going to charge you $25 and have it out of sync with your membership. They'll figure out what percentage of the year is left on your membership and prorate the $25 accordingly, so that the money will run out at the same time that your dues ends for that year, and then it will be in an annual synced mode where you pay $25 straight and it continues for the 1 year of your membership.
Okay, so yeah, that means they will be cutting it off then after December. I mean, you know, ideally they would have to give everybody a rebate for that money for those months. I don't know. There's something wrong. I think they blew it on this one. I think you're right. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, the bottom line is that they're operating rather strangely and I think unfairly, and I don't think it really gains them that much money. I mean, their accountant knows for sure the price difference, but I think the enmity that they're building up in a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of club members who are not ARRL members. Andy, may rest in peace, used to enjoy reading QST. Friends would give him their old issues and he would read them, but he had no interest in the ARRL. And so I think that's not an unusual thing. There's about, I think, 800,000 FCC licensed amateurs in the United States, and I think the number of ARRL members is somewhere slightly above 100,000, maybe. So, you know, and this petty behavior is not going to improve that, I don't think. So I feel sorry for everyone involved. I think this was a foolish decision on the executive board, and we'll see if it ultimately has any kind of detrimental effect, or people will simply grit their teeth and pay more for membership, like they do for a dozen eggs and other such things. It's, you know, unfortunate and disappointing, and it's not like they care.
Well, wasn't your the membership fees that you paid as the services by the ARRL, but there are really no services, so to speak, of, right, by the ARRL? It was basically what you paid for was a subscription to QST, am I right?
By the way, Jim recognized, you doubled with Jim, we'll get to Jim in a moment. No, actually, if you talk to them, they'll tell you about all the services that the 95-odd percent of us don't avail ourselves of. There is the VE service, in which, unlike some other VE services that are given free to new hams, they charge $15 a hit, but that's a service. The emergency amateur radio emergency services is a service. Net traffic system is a service. They'll tell you, and they have other services, and they maintain contests and all kinds of things. So they would probably give you a laundry list of services and support at the federal level of frequencies and at the international level. So I'm sure they would come up with a long, long list of things considered by them to be services for hams. Does it really affect us immediately? No. It's one of those things that maybe if we didn't have it over 20, 30, 40, 50 years, other agencies would slowly nibble away at our frequencies and leave us nothing. But there's no way to tell. So as far as the ARRL is concerned, they're chock full of services.
Funny, I'm an active ham radio operator. I'm not a member, and I absolutely don't need any of their services.
Okay, I understand it, and you're in the majority. I think they kind of look at it like guys who are in a job that's a union place, but you don't necessarily have to join the union. So you get the benefits of the union without having to pay the dues of the union. So they say that they're continuing. They have official servers. They have emergency radio, amateur radio emergency services, VE teams, and they'll go on and on and on, educational things and all kinds of stuff. So they'll make a case for themselves, and you make a case for yourself. And, you know, like I said, it's the way it's been for a long, long time. There's a lot of people who are active hams who were at one point or another members of the ARRL and didn't really find it rewarding, didn't need the magazine, and so they left. So, again, you know, come back here 10 years down the road with your accountant and ask them if they made a lot more money or they lost a lot more members with this scheme. You know, I certainly understand kicking up the dues because the price of everything has increased. I think the last time they increased the dues was something like 10, maybe 18 years ago. But, you know, I mean, it went from 49 to 59, which is fine, but then they tacked the $25 on. I think they're a penny wise and a pound foolish. But what can I tell you? Jim, what did you want to say?
I've been noticing that on many fronts and many different sides of different fences, information or news sources have been for a long time moving behind paywalls, and it's been happening at an exponentially higher rate recently. I wonder, well, they don't know what that means, but it seems like it may have some relevance to this question.
Well, my understanding is that generally the advertising rates are not going up the way that industry would like to. Whenever anything relatively new happens, businesses tend to not focus on profitability immediately. They try to become the popular or the near popular, or, you know, have a large base of viewers. And the idea is, first you have to build up the audience, and once you've gotten the audience, then you tie them down, you hog tie them, and you build them. You can't build them enough. They feel with just those lousy ads that flash in your eyes, especially with ad blockers and such being available. So they're trying to monetize, and you see it all over the net, is going through this painful, annoying monetization. You have X/Twitter, where Elon is desperately trying to squeeze blood out of a rock by asking people to pay for all kinds of stuff. You have paywalls. You have companies that used to have a free APIs that allowed third parties to interface with their software, and they're starting to charge higher and higher rates for that to monetize it. So this is all trying to make things profitable, and consumers are going to kick back and refuse some of them and accept others. You know, streaming networks, X, all these places are trying to get more money out of us. Some will be successful, and a lot of them will fail.
Definitely interesting turns of events, and it makes the question of who is managing the flow of the information. But we'll leave that discussion for another day. I appreciate your thoughts.
We'll see what happens. Again, this is a dangerous move on businesses, and some of the people involved know this. It's going to be the downfall of some companies. Twitter, I really don't like calling it, has lost billions of dollars in value, and will probably continue. It may not go bankrupt, but it will be a shadow of its former self. And there will be, when the second streaming service started up, they started to use the term the streaming wars. Because there is no place for 12 different streaming services. People just can't afford to spend $15 a month on 12 different services. So there will be a lot of deaths in the streaming service as well. Some will be winners, most will be losers. Caveat emptor, and that's capitalism. Anyway, thanks to everyone for talking and participating about my complaint of the night. Let's kind of return to business as per usual. We are open to business as technical questions or comments or topics of discussion. So if you're out there and you have something on your mind, preferably the first few people try and make it about amateur radio, but anyone out there with questions or comments, hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
A2SCP, technical question.
And 2XGN, science fiction.
W2BZ, amateur question. Amateur related question.
Okay, Chris, Wes, and Rich recognize. Anyone else want to put your name down on the list tonight?
I'll throw in KD2VHD.
Okay, Jim recognized. Anyone else? Going? Okay, gone. Let's go to the top of our list for tonight. Chris, what's your question?
Thanks, Roy. K2SDP Mobile. Just a quick question about magnetic loop antennas. I'm not that familiar with them. However, when I was walking around the Deer Fest last year up in New Hampshire, there was a gentleman there with maybe a 6-foot loop hanging in a tree, and it was tied to an old boat anchor receiver. Absolutely unbelievable, the reception it was getting. So I've been thinking about trying to use one as a receiver for some of the receivers I have, receive only. And the one problem I have with it is they seem to be very directional, which obviously from the look of it. I'm wondering if there's any magnetic loop antennas that are not directional. So, I mean, in my mind, I thought maybe you could have a second loop at 90 degrees to the first one. And the question is, would that screw up the whole theory behind the magnetic loop in the first place? So is it just a magnetic loop that's not really directional? That's the question. K2SCP.
Okay. They're bidirectional as opposed to unidirectional. As you look through the big hole, it radiates at a right angle to that axis. So along the the actual loop surface on either side, it's directional, but you have to take that with a grain of salt. I have read articles where people say that you could null out noises and such by adjusting it, and I bought what is now sold by DX Engineering that used to be a mom-and-pop operation, but he retired and sold it to DX Engineering. It's purely receiving a magnetic loop. It has a high gain, low noise amplification circuit. It has a locked-in tuning system, so you don't have to retune it for everything. It's a broadband receiver. It syncs as a transmitter because it would have a high SWR if you could do it, and you'd burn out the rather nice. A high gain, low noise filter, amplifier rather. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, the point of my mentioning my DX Engineering loop is that I bought a rotator for it, and it was kind of pointless. For whatever reason, it's very sensitive to the location that you put it in, and what I put it in was my backyard. Which I have one of those two-family houses that are cookie cutters, with one row in the front of the street and another mirror row on the back of the street, and the backyards are all connected with fences. So for some odd reason, maybe it was the reflection of the RF in that type of corridor of two-family homes, that it was really not directional. Magnetic loops are supposed to be directional. It varies on what frequency you're using it as. As you bring it up the frequency, I think it gets less and less directional. As you bring it down to its lowest operating, it gets more. And for whatever reason, I found no directionality in mine. So it's not quite that much of a problem, in my humble opinion. Worst comes to worst, as I tried to do, get yourself a little inexpensive rotator and use the rotator with it. Yes, Wesley?
Technically, it's for receiving only, it could be crisscross. Am I using proper terminology, cross magnetic loop antenna? There was a Lencom, LENCOM. There was cross magnetic loop antenna designed for high quality receiving. And that was Navy's. So wasn't really for a general public. But if you Google it, Lencom crossed magnetic loop antenna, you're gonna see it. It looks like a toy, but it works. And when I'm looking at it, I see at the bottom of it, the small box that is attached to the post the antenna is standing at. I assume that was the amplifier. That was signal amplifier, amplifying the signal right from the antenna, so you don't lose the signal over the coaxial cable to the receiver. Now, if I was to do it, I wouldn't try to crisscross, because it wouldn't work for transmission. I would rather put two antennas at the distance, one from each other, at 90 degrees. Back to your intuition.
Okay, Wes, I understand that, and I thought of that in my head, but then that kind of pretty much doubles your expenses and doubles your inconvenience, because now you have two antennas that have to be tuned. And like I said before, if my experience in the past showed a dramatic directionality that it didn't, I might consider it, but again, for significantly less price than buying and dealing with two separate magnetic loops, again, you can get a, especially if you get the receive-only, you're relatively light. You could probably use one of those RCA rotators that cost about $120. So, you know, you could probably solve your problem. The problem with us is sometimes we really think of complicated, unique, ways of dealing with things that are clever, but probably not time and cost effective. So, again, I think the best approach is to just get yourself a reasonable rotator and call it a day. And you may be surprised that you don't really get that much out of it. Again, it sort of really depends upon what portion of the frequencies you use for the loop and the environment surrounding your loop. How bi-directional it turns out to be.
Yeah, thanks for that, Roy. And the fact that you're saying it wasn't as directional as you thought is exactly what I was looking for. So maybe I wouldn't even need the rotator, but I certainly could try that. But that's what I was looking for. I just can't believe how clean the signal is out of those antennas. It's pretty amazing. That's exactly what I was looking for, and I do see, Wesley, the antenna you were referring to as well. I'll take a look at that. Very interesting. Thank you. K2SDP.
Yeah, the description of the antenna Lencom, L-E-N-C-O-M, says 1 to 30 megahertz, dedicated to receive. That's what it says about it. And I'm on the company site, and it's lencom.com.au. Enter it here.
If anyone is interested in a receive-only magnetic loop, to check out BX Engineering. Like I said, that design has been popular and selling for, it must be 20, 30 years. They only bought ownership of the design about 7 or 8 years ago. But it's a decent magnetic loop. It's not going to replace a nice antenna put on the roof. But if you need something quick and dirty and portable, it's not quite as portable as some other magnetic loops that are made out of coax cable. These used to be Pixel, something like that. They're made out of aluminum tubing, so it's not quite that portable, but, you know, it's very simple to set up in your backyard. I tried it in my house, which is a Faraday cage, and was initially very disappointed. I couldn't hear anything, and then I took it out to the backyard, and it was significantly better. So it was a nice compromise antenna. So BX Engineering is the manufacturer.
K2MEU with a comment?
Certainly.
Thanks, Roy. Just to answer the gentleman about the magnetic loop, I got from also DX Engineering a Mazzoni Stealth Loop, it's called. It's expensive, but it's an amazing solution for the HOA. It transmits on 10 through 40. It receives extremely well. The only difference, and I've tested it extensively against a full-size dipole, is it transmits about 4 to 6 decibels worse on 40 meters, but it's only 4 feet long and less than 3 feet high, and it seems a small trade-off to have that kind of portability to lose a little bit on the transmit side at the low end.
Ah, that's good to hear. I'm familiar with the brand. I've looked at they have a maxi loop and a mini loop, and then they have the self, and they have that control box. And I was kind of astounded by their loops. They're rather massive objects. I believe they're designed and built in Italy. And up until about 5 years ago, they did not have a United States distributor. If you wanted them in the United States, you ended up having to import them through a third party. But in the last few years, they found distribution in the United States. And, you know, I've looked forward eventually to find someone who bought one and used one, because the design of the Stealth and even of the others were kind of amazing to me. It's a unique design. If anyone kind of looks them up, I think once again DX Engineering is the distributor. They are, you know, the variable capacitors are really unique design, unlike all the others, at least that I've seen, of magnetic loops.
Roy, I run up to 500 watts through mine with DX Engineering's blessing. It's only rated for 125. The 500 watts makes up at the low end for the lat transmit, but I can second your observation on the magnetic loop. It doesn't seem directional at all, even though by design it's supposed to be. I haven't had to rotate it. And at 10 meters and 20 meters, it's only a little bit worse than the dipole on the transmit.
It's good to hear. I mean, the problem with magnetic loops is because of the nature of their design, their radiation resistance is very low, so any insertion loss will undermine their efficiency. They're not the most efficient. They have this interesting quality of not really having quite that much noise pickup. That's where guys kind of make up things about it functioning on the magnetic field and not the electric field and such. I'll leave that to another night. But they're low noise, low efficiency, but very useful functionally. So I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying it. Yeah, one of the things that kind of struck me as a problem with the bigger versions of those magnetic loops is what kind of rotator do you use on them? They look like they're built like trucks.
They do be 20 to 40 pounds, I think. Again, mine, I haven't had to rotate, but if you do, you just walk outside. The Mazzoni Stealth, who sits on the ground, you turn it with your hand. And the other thing I'd add, I think you mentioned before, they're very, very high Q, but the tuning box they have, the ATU, works extremely well, and you get used to using it quickly. It doesn't take that much time to tune from frequency to frequency with it.
Great. I'm glad to hear it. I was very curious when I first saw it. I think the first time I saw it was in an ad in a UK amateur radio retailer, and it doesn't look like a magnetic loop at all. It looks sort of like a one of those scissor elevators, at least from the pictures that I've seen.
That's right, Roy. I told my neighbors who were asking alternatively it was a carjack or a bear trap, because we're trying to keep it stealthy. But I don't think it is quite a traditional magnetic loop, because you're right, magnetic loops are supposed to transmit perpendicular to the plane, but this one transmits in line with the plane. Even the literature says it transmits in line with the plane. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, although I do know it is an expensive but very good solution for an HOA.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I would imagine that it doesn't quite operate exactly like the standard magnetic loop, because the geometries are completely, as what I could see, different. But I'm glad it works for you, and I'm kind of a fan of the technology and those machines, and, you know, if I had a lot of money to burn in the back of my head, I have considered in the past putting something like that up in my backyard, but I've always kind of pulled back a little bit, but it's good to know that it's working well for you, and yeah, the control box interests me as well. I've seen people use the control box occasionally. I've heard them talk about how occasionally it kind of goes out of sync and you have to resynchronize it with the motor movements of the device it's connected to, which sounds a little problematic. But also I've heard that there were more than one version of the control box out there, so maybe they've improve that synchronization since last I heard.
Yeah, they have. The latest control box, the ATU-2, I think, is the one they're sticking with. I'll tell you the problem. If you don't put toroids on the control cable, that RF energy occasionally comes back to the box and screws it up. When I put a bunch of toroids on the cable, those sync problems stopped.
Yeah. I could see where that would be a problem. Back about 8 months ago when Rich W2BZ was talking about magnetic loops and a Wi-Fi controller, I was a little concerned that, you know, common mode and RF in general, very close to the control box of the magnetic loop might be problematic. So I could see that. Yeah, look, toroids are relatively cheap and very effective. So if you're a ham, you should have a bunch of them hanging around no matter what, because, you know, they're probably the answer to half of the why isn't this working right questions that people have. So thank you very much. I do appreciate the report, especially my curiosity about that stealth loop has been assuaged somewhat. Rich, did you want to say something? I think I heard you.
Yeah, I did. I've built a couple of magnetic loops now. I have one operating now on 15 through 40, and I do have it on a rotator, and I agree. I didn't at first, but now I do, because I only operate with the magnetic loop. I built the loop by myself, and I'm the one who uses the Wi-Fi controller box to tune the loop, and after you get used to it, you can tune up pretty quickly on any band with the Wi-Fi, and it doesn't change once you hit a spot on the variable capacitor with the Wi-Fi. It always lands close as you need to, and you just need to, you know, finesse it to lowest SWR after you get it in the general area. It only takes like 15 seconds or so. But I would agree with Roy and everybody else that I have...
Rich, you fell out of the repeater.
H2SCP, yeah, that's going to hurt, Roy, when you fell out of that. Just to repeat, I only want this for receive. I appreciate all the info. I only want this for receive only. And you mentioned on the lower, it was less directional, and that's exactly where I want it for, all the way down 1 megahertz, maybe up to 40 meter band, but mainly 160, 80 in that area. But thank you. I appreciate it. K2SDP.
And Tom Sheehan with a comment.
Yes, I think Rich kind of fell out of Echolink. He came back on Echolink, so we'll give him an opportunity to say, finish what he has to say, and then we'll move on to you, Wesley.
Okay, it looks like he's not yet. Yeah, I have a little correction to the comment that I have made. I went to the Glencom. L-E-N-C-O-M. And when I was first looking at that antenna that is like two loops at 90 degrees in one antenna, vertically, and it says 1 to 30 megahertz, I thought it's a toy. Then I look at the company, it's a military contractor. So they are Australian, and they have so many things, starting from amplifiers, 1 kilowatt automatic tuner, active tune dipole, and they do it also for ham radio too. Delta antennas, elevated feed manifolds, flag antennas, folded dipoles, and HF, horizontal, whatever you want. They have everything. I got an idea. If the interested party, interested person, goes to just make a call to design engineering and ask them, there is a Lancome, it's like two antennas at 90 degrees in one antenna. Can you make something like that? Or do you make it kit? Or is it in your agenda or whatever? And I spoke to them They were very kind people, but it was some time ago. And they, I was talking about the Yagi antenna, and they told me, just wait, and we're going to have it, and whatsoever. I wasn't interested after that, but yes, I believe that that may work. And to the ship.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
Yeah, I'm on my radio now. Echo Link just dropped me. Should I continue?
Yes, feel free.
Okay, so as I was saying, the you only have to turn it 180 degrees to get to the other side of the antenna, which is your other radiating direction. So it is noticeable. It is noticeable. Sometimes it's hard to judge it, you know, with the QSB, whether you're hearing a peak of a signal because of QSB or because you turn the antenna. But I 15%, maybe 20% at the most. And again, I wouldn't I wouldn't have bought the rotor if I know what I know now. So it's not that important, especially just for receiving.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. That would have been, well, if I had known better. I mean, it was probably the first antenna that I actually bought. So, probably the best approach is buy the antenna, put it in the location you plan to use it in. You know, when you're outside, move it around a little bit, get a sense for whether it's directional or not directional, whether it's warranted to spend the money on a rotator. And again, I wouldn't spend too much money on a fancy schmancy rotator. Most of the receiving magnetic loops I've seen are relatively light, and you could probably, once again, get away with something like an RCA rotator that Amazon sells for about $125.
Roy, also there's an MLA-30. Mike, Larry, Adam, MLA-30. My phonetics aren't so great. MLA-30 or an ML-30A. I forget which one it is. That is wildly popular on the internet in terms of a receiving loop. It has a little, I have one and they're great. It has a little amplifier that comes with it, and it was like $25 when I bought it. I think they're up to $40 now because of the popularity. I would really look into that little loop before you spend any money at DX Engineering.
Okay, AC2GS, by the way. Yeah, I remember when you bought it. It's Chinese stuff, so the quality might be good, it might be terrible. The loop is just a small piece of spring steel wire, so the insertion loss is even greater, so the efficiency of the signal is even worse. They may or may not make it up by the gain of the amplifier, but I don't know how noisy it is and how high gain it is. So, yeah, if you're looking to play around and experiment and you got a tight wallet, that might be a ways to go. You know, for some things I go China, but for other things I go American brands. But, you know, whatever you decide.
Question, is Design Engineering Chinese company?
No, I am right now talking about the Rich, W2BZ, mentioned that he bought something called, I think, the MLA-30, which is a inexpensive, shall we say, kindly, Chinese product. It's a small, I don't know if it's weatherproof, metal box, and a very thin a spring steel wire that loops around it to be a receive-only loop antenna.
Okay, and one more thing. When I was talking about the two crisscross or two loops at one, I stress it's 1 to 30 megahertz. And you guys have antennas from 20 meters up or from 18 megahertz up. This one covers from 1 megahertz to 30 megahertz. receiving only. Enjoy field.
I'm waiting for the background noise to lessen. You know, when someone advertises that it works for a certain band, they don't necessarily mean it works terribly well. And so my guess is there's an optimum portion of that frequency range where the gain is relatively higher and the noise is relatively lower, and there are less optimal places on that wide range where you might hear a signal if it's strong enough and near enough, but most likely you won't. So, I mean, like I said, I've kind of had a very similar product in what now is sold by DX Engineering. I was able to pick up the AM bands. You know, I could listen to broadcast AM on my magnetic loop. But I don't know if I'd exactly advertise that it works for, you know, 500 kilohertz and above. It depends. You know, so, you know, take frequency range specifications with a small grain of sand.
Can we think that antenna rated as NAVIS, NVIS, which is the near vertical incident sky wave, from military contractor could be compromised? Kind of difficult to believe. Back to you.
Well, I think business is business, and gain of antennas are usually written by the marketing department and not the electrical engineering department. And I wouldn't particularly want a near vertical incident skywave, unless I was in the Army communicating to troops locally and I was stuck in a valley or something. I want something that's going to go into the ionosphere and circle the Earth, personally. So the last thing I would kind of look for in an antenna these days would be a near vertical incident skywave, because I'm not planning to join the Army anytime too soon.
PhD would have thought?
Certainly, Jim.
I might have said it before, but my whole reason to come to ham radio was for near vertical incident skywaves. Not because I need to talk to, troops attacking Mothra in Japan or something, but because I like the idea of being able to communicate in a couple states in my area. You know, on a bad day, who's got water, who's got milk, who's got fuel? For me, that comes first. That brings me here. Largely, the ham community is a bunch of people talking about talking. But somewhere in the midst of it, there's some real information getting exchanged that I come here for. And that's why I gravitate to this, because that happens. But I think that the NVIS, near vertical incident skywave, is a terrific propagation mode that I have great interest in. So I'd like to hear more about it. And I think most people should at least consider it as an option. Back to that.
Hey, Jim, I understand. I mean, for the most part, most of the places I've seen advertising their antennas as near vertical incident skywaves are attached in some way with military specs. So it's a really big item in military circles, not quite as much amateur radio related. You'll find that the standard antennas that are not really designed for near vertical incident skywave can travel to New Jersey and Connecticut. Some might think that's far enough, others that it's not far enough, and you know, there are other bands that have a little bit more ground wave propagation. So, you know, there are other ways to kind of accomplish similar things, and relay stations are always another option as well, where you might not have three states wide coverage. I don't know if you'd have three states wide coverage with near vertical incident skyway, because you know, it's only a kind of limited local. But it depends on the frequency, depends upon propagation conditions, like most things. You know, ground wave reflecting off of the cloud cover on top is only going to give you so much spread. I don't think it would spread to three states, but I could be wrong.
The interesting thing is that it gets to the people that otherwise you're shooting over the head. And those are potentially great contacts also that can be got with no infrastructure between during power outages or just during Monday or Tuesday. Anyway, that's my focus on the hobby is that everybody's got a different take. I just figured I'd throw my thoughts out there. Back to that.
KD2GS. Yeah, sure. I understand that, Jim. It's just that, a lot of people are most of us don't live in valleys. The place where a near vertical incident skywave is priceless is if you're some kind of in an area where you're in a valley, there's a bunch of hills around you, and it's blocking your transmissions. And so using near vertical incident skywave can get you a little bit farther by bouncing off of the cloud cover and such. But generally speaking, if you elevate your antenna, if you get out of the valley and nearer to the hills and such, then, it's thankfully not quite as important. But I understand your interest in it. There are other people interested in it. There would be a field of NVIS if not. So be it. Different strokes for different folks. I've always kind of been more interested. Brooklyn is not terribly hilly. There's buildings and such, but I don't think a near vertical incident skywave is going to do that much benefit for me versus a standard skywave and ground wave type of antenna. But I understand your interest, and that's what makes this hobby so interesting to me. Is that there's a lot of different things and a lot of different people with a lot of different interests.
It's interesting to know, and I'll check and see if I got it for a brief additional comment.
Roy, could I get that gentleman Jim's call sign? It's John K2MEU. I do a lot of NVIS testing the last few months at 40 and 80 meters, and I'd love to talk to him further offline.
Sure. Jim's call sign is KD2VHZ.
Roger that. KD2VHZ. Thanks a lot, Roy.
Yes, I'm sorry, Jim. We kind of talked over you. What would you want to say, Jim?
I was correcting KD2VHD, Kilo Delta 2 Victor Hotel Delta.
I'm sorry. I think I was affected by listening to Ken earlier on EchoLink.
Station, I was asking, what's your call, and I'll see if I can contact you. I don't have much of a presence on the web.
You're saying it's Kilo 2 Mike Echo Uniform, K2 Marine Expeditionary Unit. Name is John.
Okay, John, is there a contact for you on QRZ or something?
Yep, sure is. My email is on QRZ.
Roger, I'll do that. Back to Roy.
Okay, very good. I assumed we kicked around the magnetic loop about as much as it could be kicked around, Chris?
Yes, you did. Thank you very much. More than what I needed, and that's perfect. I'm going to give it a shot, and I'll report back someday. K2SDP, thank you.
Okay, you're quite welcome. Next on our list for tonight is Rich, W2BZ. What's your topic for tonight? You said amateur radio related.
Yeah, I was wondering about, the lobes that are created by antennas, and how are they actually calculated? Because if you run an antenna program, a simulation program, they will come up with a pattern for the lobe, whether it's a donut or whatever the shape it is. And I'm wondering how can they come up with a pattern? It has to be based on the mathematics of what's going on in the antenna for them to be able to project a lobe or a pattern from it. And I was just wondering how that's done.
Okay. The simple answer is with great difficulty. There are a number of antenna simulation software. Occasionally, the differing programs are interfaces to the same algorithm subroutine that some, I think it's a it's an agency of the United States is in charge of selling to people. You could, I think it's NEC 5, version 5. It's a very complicated set of simulations.